your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Wednesday morning, December 10, 2025, as I record this episode. Last day of the 2025 winter meetings will feature the Rule 5 draft. As is expected, the Chicago White Sox will add to their 40-man roster. Recommend listening to our previous podcast as Baseball America's J.J. Cooper sat down with Jim Margulis to talk about and preview this upcoming Rule 5 draft. It was fantastic information coming from J.J. Cooper, who loves the Rule 5 draft more than anyone. Fingers crossed that the White Sox do get lucky like they did with Shane Smith. But a reminder, last year when the White Sox selected Shane Smith, we were all in a rush to learn as much as possible about Shane Smith, and then Garrett Crochet got traded. The White Sox don't have another Garrett Crochet on hand to trade. Who knows, maybe they do trade Luis Robert later this afternoon, even though nothing sounds imminent from the Chicago White Sox. But we really got hyped up about Shane Smith during spring training and then into the regular season. So again, fingers crossed that the White Sox do select somebody with that second overall pick in the Rule 5 draft and they turn out to be just as good as Shane Smith. But luck was on the White Sox side on Tuesday night during the MLB draft lottery, having the highest odds ever in the MLB draft lottery history at 27%. The White Sox become the first team since the MLB draft lottery was created to win the first overall pick. So it finally happened in four tries. The White Sox are the first team to have the best odds of getting the number one overall pick and landing that pick. White Sox general manager Chris Getz, naturally, is pretty excited.
Significant event for us. And it can't be understated how important it is. You know, we've been, you know, hard at work at bringing talent into the organization in different ways. And obviously the amateur draft is an obvious avenue. And now to be able to get a chance at, you know, the top talent in the draft is really exciting and just gives us a greater boost. You know, I last year, you know, as pieces, as players were joining our major league club and performing the way that they did, you know, you began to see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, and now it's just shining a little bit brighter.
White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting Mike Shirley calls winning the MLB Draft Lottery a great day in White Sox history.
Great day in White Sox history. We're super excited. We will exhaust all resources to be sure we're prepared to execute the draft plan that's right. You know, Chris continues to build this thing out with a real plan, a plan that continues to build opportunities for the White Sox, and this will be another step in that direction.
Getz admitted that he tried to govern his emotions, but he did get excited as the lottery went on.
The whole draft, you know, prepping for the draft lottery, you know, you want to, you know, govern your emotions because you just don't know what the outcome is going to be. And, you know, but I, as, you know, the team start falling, well, it's got to end up somewhere, and it looks like it's coming our way. So, I can't say how excited that we are. I'm really happy for our organization, our fan base, and, you know, look forward to diving in more, learning more about this upcoming draft, and, you know, getting out and watching these guys. And it's just a big moment for us, and the opportunity not only to, you know, capitalize on the first pick, but you know, the depth of this draft and having, you know, the pool space, the capital to go out there and bring in even more talent is really exciting as well.
So now the White Sox have the number one overall pick. That means you can run down a grandstand at 35th and Wallace to get yourself a Rock Chalowski jersey made, right?
There's a couple guys that are standouts right now, but you look, you know, at past drafts, the Paul Skeens draft, you know, going into that one, he wasn't a consensus 1-1. So, you know, you still got to do the work. You stay at it and you're open-minded. Now that we've received the number one pick, I'm fairly confident tonight I'll be diving in a little bit more. How the draft works and the way, you know, people can, or teams can move draft picks around based on just pool space. But when it's a clear number one, you know, and I would say that logistically it becomes a lot easier.
Obviously, every MLB general manager would be heavily involved in the draft process, especially when they have the number one overall pick. But Chris Getz has a lot on his plate, so he will lean on Mike Shirley and the amateur scouting department to develop a game plan in how the White Sox will attack the 2026 MLB draft. First, Shirley comments about Rock Chalowski and how the White Sox have been tracking him since high school.
Rock does a lot, and I do think that he's earned the right to be on that leaderboard, if that's what you want to call it. But we have a long way to go. You know, that's something Rock's got to continue to define his careers like all players do as they lead up to the draft. But he's a great player. He comes from a baseball family. There's a lot of attributes you got to like about Rock and history of what he's done at UCLA. I spent a lot of time on him in high school. Felt like that he was worthy of being a topper pick, a high-end pick. So I do feel like that we know the kid, know the family, some of that work is right there. But like I said, there's multiple players across this great country that are going to answer that bell and try to get their place in line along with Rock. And that's the best thing about the draft, right? You want the players to compete for that top spot.
While many White Sox fans on social media are already coming up with 2027 lineups and debating where the White Sox should move Colson Montgomery defensively for Rock Chalowski, listen carefully in how Shirley talks about the real importance of having the number one overall pick.
Being smart, I mean, obviously, MLB sets rules where you give them a pool of money, and you got to be smart about how you allocate and build that out. There may be an obvious choice, but there also may be ways to be creative to secure multiple resources instead of one. So I think preparation, our staff will work extremely hard to get this right, and we'll execute the best way we can. We knew where we were at. We knew our chances were great, so the staff has worked extremely hard to already kind of get this in line, who we feel like that pool looks like. So I do think going into with the dead period, the Major League instituted period where you cannot scout players, we felt like once we get to that moment, we had a pretty good inclination where the day would start. So when you get back to work January 15th, up until draft day, we kind of have a good insight on this, right? But there are players that will take a step forward. There are players that are hungry to go in the draft at the top. So I do feel like that we have to cover this top to bottom.
Yes. The draft money game. This is what we at Sox Machine will be discussing at great lengths leading up to draft day on July 11th. I think Shirley breaks it down well and how it will affect the White Sox decision making, especially having the ability to offer higher bonuses in the second and later rounds.
I feel good about that. I think that's some of the things we've been able to accomplish as of late with Grant Taylor and Caleb Bonimer. Let's continue that trend. Let's continue to build this out. That's what I mean about the pool allocation that you're given to. Maybe there's three pieces in there that we absolutely love that you can stretch your dollar a little bit to get in touch. And it's real. Players, they want the value in their pocket. You're given the biggest pool resources, let's execute that.
For example, the Washington Nationals had the number one overall pick last year, and that bonus amount was a little more than $11 million. And overall, they had the fourth highest pool amount at $16.5 million. Now, if you just draft the best player available at number one overall and you sign them at slot, that's a huge, huge chunk of your bonus pool money, and it really impacts on what you can do in rounds 2 through 10. What the Nationals did by selecting teenager Eli Willits first overall and signing Willits to an $8.2 million signing bonus, so almost $3 million below that bonus amount value for the first overall pick, they were able to draft and sign players in the second through fifth rounds between $2 to $2.5 million signing bonuses. Four of those five players were high schoolers. So because having the number one overall pick, and maybe the Nationals will still admit that Willits was number one on their board and they valued him higher than everybody else, but they have a new front office, so maybe their minds have changed since last July when it comes to the MLB draft. But that having the number one overall pick for the Nationals allowed them to significantly add impressive prep talent all the way from rounds 1 through 5. Speaking of last year and speaking about hype, at this time, everyone was hyped up about Ethan Holliday and that the White Sox, even in the 2024 MLB draft lottery, got unlucky having a top five pick because that meant they would be missing out and earning the chance to have the number one overall pick in 2025 because they'd be missing out on drafting Ethan Holliday, who is a quote-unquote generational talent. That hype train for Ethan Holliday went for two draft cycles, much longer than the Rochelowski hype train will be going on. Holliday ended up going fourth overall to Colorado, and maybe he will still be a generational talent, even though Jackson Holliday doesn't seem to be his older brother, doesn't seem to be a generational talent at this moment. Doesn't mean he's not a very good player. I mean, generational talent, like, what are we talking about? Hall of Famers? They're teenagers still. We could get really excited about this, and I love it because I love the MLB draft. I love the hype and the excitement that everybody has. Holliday did sign the highest bonus in the draft last year at $9 million. But remember, and I've been stressing this for years now, the MLB draft is weird. This is not the NFL. This is not the NBA where you take the best player available, the most hyped players, and shoot, maybe the best players in a respective top prospect list don't always go number one overall. Because of the bonus amounts and the bonus pools, teams try to be creative and maximize the talent that they can draft and sign. And it really is about not best player available. In the MLB draft, it is the best player available that we can sign. And if Mike Shirley says that we want to just spend $9 million with the number one overall pick, because Chris Getz, that allows me to offer $3.5 to $4 million in the second round, or $2 to $2.5 million, and follow the Nationals playbook from last year in rounds 3, 4, and 5, and we could really come away with 4 or maybe 5 guys in our top 100 in next year's draft. That would be the reason why Rochelowski doesn't go number one overall, if he asks for too high of a signing bonus, if the White Sox want to draft him number one overall. Again, the MLB draft is quite weird. And it brings me to the hysteria that I am seeing online with Rochelowski, and hysteria is the correct word here. I wrote about Chalowski on SoxMachine.com Wednesday morning. I like Chalowski a lot. I like him so much that I gave him my first place vote because I am a voter for the Dick Houser Award, which part of the National College Baseball Writers Association. That's our Player of the Year Award. There's two of them. The Dick Houser Award, which is given out the day before the College World Series, and the Golden Spikes Award, which the Golden Spikes Award is now being moved over to MLB Network as far as that show. And that's deemed to be like the Heisman of college baseball. Chalowski was a finalist for the Dick Houser Award, but Alex Lodis, the cousin of Kyle Lodis, who's a White Sox prospect and a recent draftee, but Alex Lodis of Florida State ended up winning the Player of the Year honors with the Dick Houser Award for the National College Baseball Writers Association. I thought Chalowski was better than Lodis last year. Lodis was very good. Don't get me wrong. Hit a lot of home runs for Florida State. Had a very good season. The strikeouts, a little too much for me, and I just thought Chalowski had a way better overall game. But my aspect, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in a moment, shifted a lot last year as far as who were the best college baseball players in the first half to second half. But with Chalowski, my favorite aspect about him is his defense. I think he can be a 60 grade defender, and he's very good laterally, moving laterally. He's got excellent athleticism, especially moving to his left and back. When you watch highlights of Rochelowski, and I put some video and highlights in that SoxMachine.com post, and you can go on YouTube or social media, there's plenty of them. Chalowski has this amazing talent to be able to run into shallow outfield and even like medium depth outfield and still make the play and have this concentration to be able to catch the baseball over his shoulder. And that does lend the idea of, hey, if you have a really good shortstop, could you move Chalowski to the outfield? Because he seems pretty comfortable chasing down shallow flies in the outfield. But he's consistent with the throwing arm, and you can see this in the highlights from the College World Series where he made fantastic defensive plays for UCLA. I really like Chalowski's defense a lot. I am a believer that he can be a shortstop professionally. On the hitting side, and this is where it gets people most excited, right? Because you see all of the home run highlights from last year. He's a right-handed hitter. I think he's got a good chance of having a 55 grade or better when it comes to power, which means that he can be someone that hits 25 to 30 home runs in the majors. My nitpick offensively, though, when you're watching these highlights, watch the pitch location. They're pretty consistent. Thigh high over the heart of the plate. And I'm glad that he can crush those pitches. But the second nitpick, a nitpick for Chalowski, UCLA plays in the Big Ten. And facing Big Ten pitching is not like facing pitching in the SEC or ACC. If Rock Chalowski played for Tennessee or LSU and put up these type of numbers, yes, the hype would be unreal. Absolutely unreal across every landscape of college baseball and MLB draft prospect analysis. It'd just be unreal. But he doesn't. And the pitchers in the Big Ten are a pretty big drop-off from the pitchers that Justin LeBron and Derek Curiel are going to be facing in the SEC. Now, the good news, and I've already put this out on social media, but circle this weekend on your calendar. February 27th through March 1st, UCLA will be in Arlington, Texas to participate in a college baseball showdown, and they're going to be facing three SEC schools, and two of them, Tennessee, actually all three, Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Mississippi State, should be pretty strong this upcoming year. So that's going to be a great test. I mean, if Chalowski has a fantastic weekend playing at an MLB ballpark with StatCast, it could be done, right? The MLB draft, number one overall pick, it should be Rock Chalowski. He proved it. All the nitpicks that everybody had, he can hit high fastballs now. He's doing a better job covering the inner half of the plate. He's not getting jammed so often. And he hit against some of the best competition in college baseball. There's nothing more that Rock Chalowski has to do other than just stay healthy. He should be the number one overall pick. So that'll be a big weekend for Rock Chalowski. Maybe I find an excuse to go down there to see Rock Chalowski. But while I would be in Texas, I would try to line it up so I could also see prep shortstop Grady Emerson, who's from Argyle, Texas. He's going to Fort Worth Christian, so outside of Dallas, which if you're in Arlington, you're already outside Dallas, so why not see if you could swing by and see Grady Emerson. And Chalowski is this right-handed college shortstop. Grady Emerson is this left-handed hitting shortstop. And we talk about it all the time about how the White Sox want to add more left-handed bats into their farm system. I think Grady Emerson is the best left-handed bat in this upcoming draft. And while we get excited about Rock Chalowski, and he was part in as far as his impressive high school shortstop class we saw in 2023, like Kevin McGonigal and George Lombard, you know, very high prospects, and we're probably going to see both of them at some time in the major leagues in 2026. We just had Jim Callis when we talked about the Arizona Fall League podcast episode, and we talked about Kevin McGonigal and how McGonigal might break opening day with the Detroit Tigers. I think that might be a little far-fetched, but we'll see. But McGonigal is the real deal. They went into the MLB draft, and at around the same age as Rock Chalowski is, they're going to be breaking through Major League Baseball. And they proved it against facing some excellent pitching in the minor leagues. Rock Chalowski is going to be hitting like 86-mile-per-hour fastballs when he faces Michigan State. That's a pretty big difference as far as the development. And that's why I think this is a 1A, 1B situation when you consider Grady Emerson. And Grady Emerson really showed out during the summer showcase and during the home run derby when a lot of scouts thought this is contact over power. It's really good contact, and he consistently barrels up pitches. It's probably 60 grade contact, 50 grade power. Grady Emerson hit 13 home runs at Truist Park. And that really surprised a lot of scouts and thinking there might be more power here at Grady Emerson than we initially thought. And he's already a plus runner. He's a plus defender. He's a plus thrower. Grady Emerson is further along at 18. He's 17 right now, but he'll be 18 on draft day than Rock Chalowski was. And this is where the whole age conversation comes into play and age modeling with the MLB draft. You have to, teams do model, like, what do we project Grady Emerson to be at age 21 when comparing to Rock Chalowski today? If Emerson is going to be further along in his development, if you draft Emerson now at 18 and at 21 he's breaking through in the major leagues, you are ahead of the game than drafting Rock Chalowski and hoping he breaks the majors at age 23. This is a factor for many teams. We know the White Sox are being more aggressive on the prep side. This is an aspect that I really like to get philosophical with Director of Amateur Scouting Mike Shirley, if this is how it's kind of changing within the White Sox from the Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn days. If Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn were still running this White Sox front office, I'm totally with you guys. Go to Grandstand, print out the Rock Chalowski jerseys. This is happening. But with Mike Shirley really favoring prep players and Chris Getz being way more open-minded about the advice and feedback that he's getting from his amateur scouts than Kenny Williams was, I'm just saying it's 1A, 1B right now. Totally do not discount Grady Emerson. If I had to put odds at it, I would say 65% chance the number one overall pick would go to Rock Chalowski. The other 35% would be Grady Emerson. Other names to consider, Jacob Lombard. Jacob Lombard has a contact issue. He had a 41% whiff rate during the summer showcase. That is not good, but he is the younger brother of George Lombard Jr. He's more athletic than his brother, and he does have some impressive power. If Jacob Lombard can fix the contact issues, I have been reading about comps from scouts. Manny Machado, that's you want to talk about hype? You want to talk about lofty expectations? But that's a name to follow. If scouts believe that the contact has gotten better during his prep year, if they think that they could fix it, you're going to hear a lot about Jacob Lombard coming into the 2026 draft. I mentioned Justin LeBron and Derek Curiel. These are the top two SEC players coming into the 2026 season. In the first half of 2025, if you followed along with my weekly coverage, I was hyping up Justin LeBron as possibly being a number one overall pick in 2026 because he was outstanding. But then he hit a slump. Strikeout rate got crazy, over 24%. And he was already over 20% his freshman year. LeBron needs to really address that strikeout rate and needs to improve his contact. But he's just as good defensively as Chalowski at shortstop. I think he's faster. He's more of a threat to steal bases. And at one point during 2025, Justin LeBron was leading the country in home runs. The power is real. This Justin LeBron could be a five-tool player. It's just the strikeouts are a concern. And if you're striking out 24% of the time in college baseball, man, you're going to be striking out a ton in minors and even in the majors. So he really needs to clean up his contact. But if he can, if he makes that adjustment, playing against better competition, don't be surprised if we talk about at some point in the month of May, Justin LeBron against Rock Chalowski as far as the best college shortstop in the upcoming MLB draft. Derek Curiel is a center fielder for LSU. He's one of my favorite players. If you listen to the conversation with Mike Farron, we talked about Curiel. Maybe one of the best contact swings in this upcoming draft. He only hit seven homers, though. It was more doubles. He hit 20 doubles, but he was a freshman. He's a draft-eligible sophomore. If Derek Curiel improves his power with his tremendous contact ability, playing for LSU and playing in center field, Derek Curiel could challenge Justin LeBron to winning SEC Player of the Year. Derek Curiel could be a legit contender to challenge Rock Chalowski for the Dick Houser Award and the Golden Spikes Award. This is a name to definitely know, especially if you've been more interested in college baseball as of late. I'm a big Derek Curiel fan. I'd still rank Rock Chalowski today in December over Derek Curiel, but just know the name. So while Chalowski is the favorite, and even though joking with Mike Farron, I am a coward and I will still continue to put Chalowski number one on my board, even though I hyped up Grady Emerson, I still feel like it's 1A, 1B between Chalowski and Emerson. The decision and what we're going to be talking about from today in December all the way through July, podcast listeners, money. What does Shirley have planned for Getz? Can they offer $3.5 to $4 million in the second round? Would that be enough to get two top 25 guys? Or can the White Sox follow the Nationals' plan and offer $2 million or more in the third or later rounds and try to get as many top 100 players as possible? Because with the White Sox picking number one overall in 2026, they cannot draft higher than 10th overall in 2027. So this is the most money they're going to have to be able to spend on the draft in the next couple of years. I think the other aspect, and this is pretty important, and man, what a week of quotes. When Chris Getz said process over results, even Jim Margulis and I had a lengthy conversation about those comments, and even talking to other White Sox beat reporters and other MLB reporters on the winter meetings floor, that Chris Getz has to do a better job of putting, just trying to sell this idea because it's not coming through, especially to White Sox fans. You guys don't want to hear process over results. But the three-year outlook, if Getz wants to draft a player that can quickly rise to the system and join the current core that he has building right now, and Colson Montgomery, I'll add Grant Taylor because he's an electric arm, Shane Smith is an all-star, and Kyle Teal, there's Brayden Montgomery and Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. They're waiting in the minor leagues to make their 2026 debut. I'm pretty excited for all three of those guys, and I am hopeful that they all make an immediate impact like Colson Montgomery and Shane Smith and Kyle Teal did, because if they do, then I think it would be really exciting baseball that we could watch in the second half of the 2026 season, and really hope that MLB and the Players Association don't lock themselves out so long that we miss games in 2027. If that generates, and Chris Getz is feeling like, if Jerry Reinsdorf's not going to give me the money to add another impact bat, that this is going to be our best opportunity through the MLB draft to do so, then yeah, I think it's going to be Rock Chulowski. He's much closer and more MLB ready than any prep player will be. However, if 2026 starts rough, and if Colson Montgomery regresses and Shane Smith struggles, does that change Getz's mind as far as how close the White Sox are to contending? Does the process make a slight adjustment in which they believe that they have more time? Even though you and I, podcast listeners, don't want to hear that because everybody's running out of patience. But if Getz changes his mind and decides that, well, the next wave really to build around is Caleb Bonnemer, Billy Carlson, and Jaden Foskey, then they can go prep. And that's where Grady Emerson and Jacob Lombard enter into the conversation. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm putting the odds at 65% at Chulowski being the first overall pick in December, over 35% over Grady Emerson. But I think these are going to be the two biggest factors in the White Sox draft room, and that conversation starting today and going all the way through July. How creative do you want to be with the draft pool money, and what is the three-year outlook? Because I think this is the next best opportunity for the White Sox to add another impact bat. And if they believe that they're going to be closer to contending, it would be Rock Chulowski. If they think they're still far away, I would start watching Grady Emerson highlights. It's December. We got a long way to go with this process, but at Sox Machine, we'll be tracking the progress of the top draft prospects weekly, starting around Valentine's Day when college baseball starts. We hope that you subscribe and track along with us. And yes, we will have a hashtag rock bottom section every week to see how Rock Chulowski performs with UCLA. That will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also listen and watch our videos on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on social media. Again, later this afternoon will be the Rule 5 Draft. Jim Margulis and James Fegan will be there. We're on all the social media platforms. Follow us at Sox Machine and follow James Fegan at JR Fegan. If you enjoy our work and want access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, especially during these winter meetings, sign up to become a Sox Machine subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5, and there's a discount for annual subscriptions. Again, go to SoxMachine.com/products to sign up today. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.